on. This is Short Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf from the Warhammer 40k and Age of Sigmar worlds. Don't miss the live show on Thursdays. But for now, you got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff coming up today. We are going to be busier than a cucumber in a women's penitentiary. What I say. I'm just saying. But hey, if you're new to the Grimdark Live experience and new to our YouTube channel, please click on the subscribe button and the Grimdark Skull bell icon for reminders on all of our upcoming and past shows. And yes, we have our new YouTube channel. The link for the new Grimdark page is going to be down below in the show notes. And if you're getting some after-ear action right now and listening on our podcast, we really appreciate you having a go at some sloppy seconds here with Grimdark Live. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. So let's do this. Let's jump right into the news here. So you kind of heard at the top of the show, at the crazy intro, that this weekend, which is going to be tomorrow, one of the greatest monster hunters in the world that ever was, and now back into this new world ever known, is going to be coming to the Mortal Realms, and that's Gotrek Gurnison. Steve, how do we feel about that, man? We are just giddy about that one.
Yeah, I mean, this is the hero that we've all been waiting for. He is going to be $35. I pre-ordered mine today. Not pre-ordered, but I set up my pre-order for today. $35. Pre-orders obviously happen at 12 noon tomorrow, and then you will be able to pick him up next weekend.
Yeah, that is it. And you know what? I got to tell you, this is such an iconic character.
He is the iconic character.
You think so? Would you go out on a limb and actually say that about him?
He is the greatest hero, the greatest character in the history of Warhammer. He is what made Warhammer what it is today.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. No other character even comes close to him.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. I really do. I mean, when I look at some of the characters that have been in the storyline, the books, the audiobooks, the game itself, I mean, he definitely would be right up there. But let me ask you this.
He's Mr. Warhammer.
That's even with an axe. He's Mr. Warhammer.
With the Fire Slayer axe. He's Mr. Warhammer.
That's it. But for most of you guys just catching up to really kind of know who Steve and I are cheesing over and actually what's actually putting Gary to sleep right now is Gotrek Gurnison. And he's a fabled hero of the books and audio dramas, and he's returning to the tabletop after a long absence. And these guys are going to be in everybody's sweaty palms who orders him next Saturday. That's a week from tomorrow. But you can go ahead and pre-order him at noon tomorrow. And yes, this guy is a beast. We're going to be talking a little bit about his war scroll a little bit later, yeah?
Yes, absolutely we are.
Yeah. So we got a lot of good stuff on that guy coming up. And, you know, to kind of give you a little background of where he is now. And I'm just going to jump into this. All right, Steve, can I do that?
Go for it.
All right. So as we talked about, he is probably the most widely renowned, one of the greatest heroes in all of Warhammer Universe. I guess the best way to put it, he's a dwarf slayer in the world that was. So it's not really fair to call him a fire slayer, right, Steve?
No, he's not a fire slayer, and the fire slayers obviously took inspiration from the troll slayers, but no, he is not a fire slayer.
That's right.
He looks a lot like a fire slayer.
He sure does.
He does. Yep. He does. Yeah. The whole red mohawk.
Well, that and the axe that appears to be on fire.
You know,
yes,
that's
because
a really
the axe he's currently the axe he's currently using is a fire slayer axe.
Uh-huh.
Because he is the avatar of Grimnir now.
Got it.
Gotcha. And that's, of course, for everybody listening, that's the stunty god, man. That's the guy that they all kind of pray to.
That's the dwarven god of war.
Yep. So he's a dwarf slayer in the world that was. He survived countless battles and even the end times. And eventually Gotrek found himself in the mortal realms of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, where his adventures are now beginning again. And this is really kind of taken the gaming community, at least as Gary would say, the broomstick and potions gaming community, kind of by storm. I mean, Gotrek was created by a guy by the name of William King back in the earliest days of Warhammer fiction. And this guy wrote some short stories for various anthologies featuring, you know, what I would like to call the unlikely duo, a dwarf slayer, Gotrek, obviously, who couldn't seem to meet his own doom, and his companion, Felix Jaeger, who I guess is still out there in the world. Nobody kind of knows where this guy is.
Yeah, we don't know what happened. Yeah, we don't know what happened to Felix. Yet.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling he's going to be introduced.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about this guy, to give a little, kind of take a left turn at Albuquerque here. He's a young human, what was he, poet? What was the word there, Steve?
A bard. He's kind of like a bard.
Gotcha, yeah. And this guy, I guess, is a big drinker. I like him already, being 100% Irish. And I guess he drunkenly pledged to record Gotrek's eventual death in an epic poem. So there's a lot of kind of, I guess, the opposite attract kind of relationship, you know, in this duo here. So the first appearance was in the story, I can't remember the name. It was
My Travels with Gotrek.
That's what it was, yeah.
Where you first hear of him, and then Troll Slayer is the very first book by William King.
Yeah, so that was almost like 30 years ago now, right?
1989. Yeah, 1989.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the characters, these guys really proved popular, and the author was inspired to use them in short fiction that appeared in the range of different Warhammer Army book published back through the 90s, and it was an instant hit. I mean, and now you can see that they're going to be coming back out with some more books to kind of keep it going. But Steve, kind of walk us through a little bit about your experience, you know, going back and looking at the short stories that were in White Dwarf about this guy, Skaven Claw, you know, their multiple battles with the Grey Seer thing, in the city of Newlin, and kind of walk us through your experience with Gotrek here.
Well, Gotrek and Felix, as I stated, was invented in 1989, and it instantly became a hit, just like you said. Gotrek is widely considered to be the symbol of the Warhammer world, much like Mickey Mouse is to Disney. His story is so compelling because throughout all of these books, you don't know what his curse is, his doom. You don't know why he became a troll slayer. Now, we eventually find out why he became a troll slayer, but I'm not going to dare, you know, say that on air tonight because I want people to read the books. And they're phenomenal books. And once you pick them up, you can't put them down. And Gotrek basically goes all over the old world, slaying monsters, killing bloodthirsters, killing every kind of horrible creature you can imagine. And on and out through his travels, he makes some pretty serious enemies. One of them being the classic and iconic character, Grey Seer Thankwell.
Right.
Who we still have today. And I know Gotrek and Thankwell are going to meet again in this new Age of Sigmar world. And they're going to go right back to it. Because Thankwell absolutely has a blood oath against him. He hates him. He'll do anything in his power to destroy him. Because Gotrek has thrown a wrench in every single machination that Grey Seer Thankwell has tried to that he's tried to do over the years to destroy the Warhammer world. The great irony of Gotrek and Felix is that Gotrek's doom is not to die. Gotrek's doom is to live.
Yeah, because you know, I guess the background of these guys that are these slayers is they're kind of shamed, so they're you know, going headlong first into battle, and they want to die, right? That's kind of what they're
yeah, they do want to die. Penance, there's a misconception. There's a misconception there about troll slayers. A lot of people think, oh, they just want to go die. No, that's not true. They want to die a hero's death to restore their honor.
Sure. Yeah,
kind of like Klingons in a way. You know, if we're going to go space, you know, something you can relate to. They're kind of like Klingons.
That just woke Gary up.
The honor is everything.
No, it didn't.
Honor is everything with them. But no person ever asks a troll slayer why they became a troll slayer.
Yeah.
It would be like to show you how egregious this would be for you to even ask the question. It would be like mocking a woman who lost a child in front of her extended family.
Right. Okay.
Times 100.
Yeah.
That's how bad it would be to ask a troll slayer why they are seeking their doom. It is a very personal thing to a troll slayer. They never share it with anyone. And one of the reasons Gotrek brings Felix along is that he is one of the few slayers, troll slayers, that actually wants his doom recorded. And as I stated, the great irony is Gotrek's doom, even unbeknownst to him, is that his doom is not to die. His doom, his curse, is actually living, because he can't die. He is so powerful and he is so good at what he does, he can't die. And Felix comes to understand this throughout the books, that Gotrek's doom is not going to happen anytime soon. Now, we think he dies at the end of the books in the old world.
In the end times, right.
Yeah, in the end times, you think he's dead.
Right.
But when he enters the Chaos Gates and the Chaos Realm, time no longer has meaning. And that's how he ends up in the Age of Sigmar world.
So let me shore up what Steve just said, so everybody kind of out there listening understands this. You know, as the Warhammer world drew its inevitable end and destruction, I guess this would be what is known as the end times. You know, and as a side note, I really didn't care for the end times. I was a big fan of Warhammer Fantasy Battle 8th Edition.
I thought it was very sloppy.
Yeah, I thought that was almost a perfect game. And then when they came into 8th Edition, ugh. So anyway, but I do digress. So, I mean, it was obvious that Gotrek was going to be involved somehow, and it fell on... you know, the author to kind of, you know, write this in, you know, story across, you know, a couple of novels during the, at the same time that end times was happening. And Kingslayer brought Gotrek, Felix, and their friends back together in a tragic tale that finally revealed the shame for which Gotrek took the Slayer's oath. And the Slayer pitted them against their ultimate enemy and finally gave Gotrek his heroic doom. But apparently, as Steve just said, now he's back with us. So this kind of brings us up to where we're going to take a brief look at his war scroll and kind of how I think or how we think he's going to be used in upcoming games. So, Steve, I got the war scroll up here. So let's talk a little bit about this. And for anybody out there that maybe you're catching us later on our podcast or not watching on the YouTube feed, find the war scroll. It's all over the place. If you don't know where it's at, it's because you don't have a spark box. Right, Gary? That's a computer for most people.
or a phone, or a friend or a book.
There you go. There you go. All right. So Steve, can you walk us through Gotrek here? We got his war scroll.
Sure. I want to start here differently tonight. I want to look at his keywords because this is important. His keywords are order, Dwarden, hero, and Gotrek. He does not have the Fire Slayer keyword. And as I stated last night, there's a reason for this. If he had the Fire Slayer keyword, he would be the most broken hero in the history of the game of Warhammer, period, hands down. There's a reason for this. I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit. Okay, so we know we can see he has 8 wounds. He has a 4-up armor save. He has 10 bravery. He's not going anywhere. His range is 1. He has 6 attacks, 3s by 3s, rend of 2, damage 3. Okay.
Now yeah, so he's a beast in combat. That much we do know.
He's an absolute monster.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what makes him so tough. You can take any ability in the world of Age of Sigmar. You could take Nagash's Hand of Dust. You could take a giant stuff down the pants auto slay. You can take the Gorgon's Swallow You Whole. You cannot auto kill Gotrek. Only if he has one mortal wound. Only if he has one wound left, which probably won't happen. You cannot auto slay him. If you auto slay him, the rule says it simply means you do one mortal wound to him. Now, because you do one mortal wound to him, he has an ability called the Shoulder Plate of Adasa, which gives him a 3+ ward save. And for those of you who don't know what that is, for my 40K players out there, that is a feel no pain. So he's a 3+ feel no pain against the auto kill mortal wound, which means 9 times out of 10, this guy is just going to be laughing at anything that hits him. Let's say you have a Bloodthirster and he does a damage 6 for his hits. Nope. Any wound against Gotrek automatically drops to 1 wound. So if a Bloodthirster has 4 attacks and he does a 6 for damage for each attack, because of Gotrek's rule, the Avatar of Grimnir, every one of those attacks now drops to 1 wound. So you only did 4 wounds to him.
Yeah, so that his wound profile shows only 8, but realistically, you can call this 80 wounds,
Yeah, now he has rerolls to hit and wound. And if he rolls a natural 6 to hit, he does D6 mortal wounds. If he's within 3 inches of an enemy after combat is over, he gets to fight again. So basically, he piles in the tax again. Here's why he does not have the Fire Slayer keyword. The Prayer of Ash, which is a prayer that the Fire Slayers use to reduce the armor save by one, that will work on Gotrek. So if he's with my Fire Slayers, and he will be in every single 3,000 point army I put together.
Yeah, and we're going to touch on his point cost and how that relates to, obviously, the 2,000 point standard game. So, yeah.
So he will be a 3-plus save. Now, if he was a Fire Slayer, if he had the Fire Slayer keyword, I would be able to reduce his armor to a 2-plus using the icon of Grimnir. So now you're talking about a 2-plus by 3-plus save. Absolutely obscene, absolutely ridiculous, could not happen. He's already going to be bad enough with a 3-plus by 3-plus with me, with Fire Slayers.
Right, yeah.
Now, if you happen to be fighting in the realm of Heish, there's a spell called, I believe it's called Healing Glow. You can heal D3 wounds to him. So this guy is an absolute combat monster. They actually did a breakdown of him fighting the most powerful monsters in the Warhammer world.
Yeah, that was in the Warhammer community, right,
Yeah. He kills them all hands down. He beats Nagash literally in one round of combat. Kills him.
Yeah.
Just kills him outright in one round of combat.
Well, I mean, it's easy to see how he can do that.
Oh, absolutely. He's the most powerful character now in the Warhammer world, hands down. He's 520 points, and he's a unique character. If you take him, he can be the only ally you take. Also, he cannot, because he's an avatar of Grimnir, he's always on the table. You cannot ambush with him. You cannot have any kind of a rule where he comes on the table late in ambush form. He must be on the table when you start the game.
So that's going to actually, so that draws up one other thing. I didn't mean to cut you off. So, you know, let's kind of shore up kind of what you're saying, because you're going through this like a pro, man, like you wrote this yourself. And I think there's going to be a lot of people out there that were trying to follow along and get an understanding of what it is. So, you know, what Steve is saying is like most armies can either deep strike or ambush. Gotrek cannot do that. And do you think though, and I want to kind of sidecar here for a second, because of his 4-inch standard movement, do you think that's going to play into a little bit of a limitation for some of the people that are going to be taking him?
No, because every time people are going to run the first turn, they're going to run the second turn. And by that time, he'll be in combat.
True.
Because the your opponent's going to have to go after him. They have no choice.
Sure.
And if they throw like a little cheesy like horde unit at him, well, he's not going to be fighting alone. Gotrek's going to be fighting along, at least in the case of my army. He's going to have 30 Hearthguard Berserkers fighting right alongside him.
Sure.
They will annihilate anything they hit. Now, I was going back to his points here for a reason.
Sure.
It's 520 points. He can only be taken, that means he can only be taken in a 3K game.
Correct.
You cannot take him in a 2K game, and I'm glad.
And for some of the new people out there, because I still get this question from some of the newbies out there, the Age of Sigmar, you can only take 400 points or 25% in a 2,000-point game for allies.
Now, he can be allied. His special rule says, and this is what really can be devastating if, you know, for 3,000-point games, he can be in any order Grand Alliance army. So we're talking Idyneth Deepkin, Daughters, Stormcast, Fire Slayers, right on down the line. He'll be able to be played with Cities of Sigmar, any order faction he will be able to be part of. So there's nothing in any of the other three factions, Chaos, Death, or Destruction, that have any kind of character even close to Gotrek. No one is close to him. They made him obscene for a reason.
Okay, give us
that
reason.
I think he is a narrative character. I want to see him in narrative games. I want to see him in fun games of 3K. But I would not want to see him in 3K tournaments. I know those are highly rare. But I would never want to see this guy in anything other than a friendly fun game, you know, at your local game store, or in a narrative kind of scenario.
So do you think that characters like this, I mean, obviously I firmly believe that Gotrek is not going to be the only, you know, character that they're going to be bringing back, you know, from the world that was.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. I think Felix is coming.
Yeah, but I think on top of that, I mean, let's take a look at, you know, some of the other characters that have been gone for a while. You know, some of the old Dark Elf characters, for instance. You know, I think there could be some other characters like him that could come back.
Well,
and I don't want to say Marathi, but whom I'm referring to.
No, she's here. Well, you had Malice Darkblade.
Well, Hellebron.
You had Hellebron.
Yeah.
You had Hellebron. Well, think of it logically.
Right.
All of the souls that died during the end times, all those elven souls were absorbed by Slaanesh. So technically, Hellebron's soul is still out there somewhere. You know, that we don't know what they're going to do. I mean, obviously, we don't know what they're going to do with the new Dark Elves. And we're getting a little off track here, but that's okay. We don't know what they're going to do with all these older characters. I would stray from doing so, and I'm going to tell you why. The old world is gone. Leave it buried. I don't mind having a character like Gotrek back, because Gotrek, I can see surviving the end times. He probably is one of the few characters that should survive the end times. I mean, if Thankful did, Gotrek should.
Yeah, I kind of like the way you put that. Leave it dead, right? You know, Coughlin's Law, bury the dead, they just stink up the joint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need them. Right. They're not necessary to the new meta, and they're not necessary to the new aesthetic of the Age of Sigmar world.
Yeah, and I think it would be too what's the phrase I'm looking for? Too soap opera-esque, you know, if they were to bring back all these old characters. You know, I think
it would be lazy.
Yeah.
And I think it would be very uncreative on their part. You don't need those old characters. You have a beautiful new world. Create new ones.
Right. Yeah, I got to tell you, I never really thought about Gotrek much before until this, and it really kind of got me more interested in this character. Really, when they started kind of tickling the idea of bringing this guy back, you know, I don't know if you remember, but back in late 2017, you started seeing the different re-releases.
Player, yeah.
Yeah. You started to see a lot of the old re-releases, you know, some of the old things that came out, you know, the anthologies, they reprinted some of the 2012 anthologies. And
you know why that is? You know why that is, Pat? Because he still holds up as the premier character of the Warhammer world. Now, we use the Disney reference.
Right.
You don't see Mickey Mouse movies. But Mickey Mouse is still the premier symbol of Disney.
That's very true. That's a great comparison.
It's the same thing with Gotrek. Gotrek is the very symbol of the Warhammer world. I don't know what the symbol of the 40K world would be. We'd have to talk to Gary on that. But for the fantasy world, Gotrek is the premier character of this world.
Yeah, and Gary, so what in comparison do we have?
Books,
so sorry about that. Go ahead.
At 40K, you don't really have any type of comparison that's like that, because there's not any one that's brought out and pulled like this guy's doing in AOS. There's nobody going around just murdering and slaughtering everything. There's a handful of people who do that, like Mortarion and Magnus. And then you have, of course, Gilliman. And then you've got other Primarchs or whatnot that may or may not be coming back in. But none of them are... There's nothing in the game character-wise that has been set up to where you can only take them a certain point range of army. So kind of everything can be dealt with. But the closest thing, I will say this, there's nothing in 40K at the moment that has a 3-up feel no pain. Nothing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That does make the guy brutal. So yeah, I kind
of
derailed.
There are there's a couple of models, though, that damage-wise, you take half damage. But nothing where it reduces it down to one.
Right. Yeah. Yep. All right, so, Steve. Sorry about that, man. I derailed.
There wouldn't be one at this point in time. The only one I could think of that may be iconic and story wise would be like the Emperor himself.
True.
But he was sitting in a chair right now.
I mean,
I'm not an Imperial guy, so I'm not the best person to talk about it.
Right.
This, and like I said, going back to the books, I think this is why GW doesn't want to get rid of this character, nor really can they. Because he is such an iconic part of the fantasy realm, the fantasy world, that, and those books are still selling.
Are you looking forward to new ones?
Felix, Oh, I can't wait. But I want to wait until like two or three of the books are released, because I know how I am, and I'm going to want to listen to them all in a row.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the audiobooks. Yeah. Right.
Well, it'll
right.
give me something to listen to, you know, when I'm driving to work in the morning. So it's perfect.
Sure. Sure. But yeah, so that's kind of what we have right now on GoTrick. I mean, he's the guy's a straight up killer, and I think he's going to be out, you know, here very soon. Well, I guess pre-order him tomorrow at noon Central Standard
pre-order
Time.
Pre-order tomorrow at noon, and then he will be released next weekend.
Yeah, yeah, and for anybody slugging around the Chicagoland area, that's 12 Central Standard Time. But yeah, keeping the momentum here going with some of the news and some of the updates. We got Warcry. We got the first expansion coming out. They're calling Monsters and Mercenaries, and this Warcry Monsters and Mercenaries is the first expansion for Warcry, and it brings the whole host of new rules and skirmish to this actual game. And I got to tell you, you know, a few weeks back when I first talked about Warcry, I was kind of down on it. I mean, I kind of pissed on it a little bit. But I got to tell you, after playing the game.
You did not piss on Warcry.
Well,
stop saying that.
Okay, all right.
You had reservations, and yeah. I think that they were legitimate reservations.
Yeah, and with that, I also said, and you know what, Steve, that's why you're a much better politician than I am. Hey, folks, vote for Steve. Vote for Slayer Steve. yeah, vote early, vote often.
we are in Chicago.
That's it. So, but my whole point with Warcry was I said at the end of that, of all my banter on it, was I would be really happy to take my words back if I was wrong. And I'm beginning to think I'm not there
absolutely.
Yet, but I'm beginning to think that maybe I was wrong, because with this expansion, this first expansion that came out for Warcry, it's doing something that's really close to my heart as a Beast of Chaos player, and that's the beasts, the monsters. I mean, your warbands in this game can go on epic quests to claim, you know, different glory and treasure and honor and all that good stuff, or they can challenge some of the most dangerous creatures in the mortal realms to battle. And here's what's crazy about this. If you best, you know, the monster, let's say you're going to fight a War Hydra or a Terrorgeist or, you know, what you know, you keep seeing up here, and that's a Chimera, you can add those monsters into your warband for this
game.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, and I got to tell you, what I find interesting is, you know, the tie-in I think is beautiful, because in Beast of Chaos, their only ally they can take in the game of Age of Sigmar is the Slaves of Darkness. And if you look up all of the factions, the units that are in Warcry, are all have the Slaves of Darkness keyword in Age of Sigmar. So what they're really doing is they're kind of tying this portion of chaos together with Slaves of Darkness, especially with the monsters and things like that. And also
Also doing too is it's a great marketing move. I mean, it's another avenue for you to sell those models
exactly.
for another game.
And that's just what's happening. They're repackaging the Chimera to have it come out separately. And I keep rolling this through my mind. I mean, fighting this three-headed beast, you know, I think we've kind of talked about this. You know what else reminds me of, this Monsters and Mercenaries? It reminds me of a great show that's on every Monday called Monster Mondays by Grimdark Live. You guys heard about that one?
I have.
I got to tell you, man.
I think I even know the guy who does them.
Oh, he's damn good looking, I'll tell you that much.
Who? What? Who?
What?
So, but, you know, this really is near and dear to my own heart. And I got to tell you, this kind of made me kind of turn my heels a little bit on Warcry. So I'm looking forward to this one. I'm even more kind of focused on what Warcry is going to be. And as a side note, to kind of get back to a little bit of the business of what the news is here, the book is going to include rules for adding some more powerful mercenary heroes and champions to your warband. As a side note, I mean, you're going to be able to add Zangor shamans or, you know, to your Cypher Lords. You're going to be able to add a mega boss to go with your Iron Jaw warbands. And so there's a lot of things that they're doing to kind of build this up. And I got a feeling now about this. I now wonder, you know, if this game here isn't going to start edging out because of the terrain. The terrain is beautiful. And by the way, the terrain can be customizable and put with other GW terrain. And so that in itself, I think, is going to be a huge piece, because let's look at it this way. With the new GHB 2019, Steve, what's in that book? Tables full of what?
Tables full of terrain.
Yeah. And so we're kind of getting into that type of cityscape. I always like to call it, it reminds me of like the old, like Stalingrad, you know, kind of a battle on the tabletop, just the rubble, these blown out, you know, buildings.
Well, you can do those kind of things with Age of Sigmar. I mean, there's no rule saying that you can't have a city fight in Age of Sigmar. The problem is, and it's the obvious one, that it's going to be very difficult to be moving all those models.
Well,
Warcry is so popular right now with people who can't afford to get into Age of Sigmar, but they want to play in that world.
Yeah, it's like what Gary said, man, gateway drug.
Yeah, it sure is, and it's a nice little game. I've watched battle reports on YouTube. It's great. It's a great game.
I've played a couple of games, and you know, if you go back and listen to a couple of shows ago, I gave my honest interpretation of it. You know, I thought that one of the things that was a positive and a negative was that they altered the mechanics of the game. And we're not going to get into that. You want to hear more about that?
No.
You can go back and listen. But they did. They altered some of that. But you know, there's also going to be some new battlefields to fight over. There's they're going to have some new what do they call them? The defiled ruins, I guess. And the chaotic beasts are also getting their own release. So they are going to start packaging some of the actual war bands themselves. You know what that's going to do? That's going to turn into Conversion City. You know, people are going to be grabbing up these models and they're going to be converting.
Which is great.
Oh yeah, yeah. And the Furies and the Raptor Axe, I believe they're called. They're going to make some great additions to any Chaos Army, because as I said, these guys here. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I could definitely see a Chaos player wanting to, an Age of Sigmar Chaos player wanting to get those Furies.
Oh, sure.
Those models are absolutely beautiful.
And I got to tell you, as somebody that owns them right now, they are beautiful.
They're phenomenal.
And they're going to be incredible. Well, that's the whole GW line. I don't care if it's Age of Sigmar or 40K. Their stuff is just exquisite. It really, really is. There's a word for you, exquisite. I almost had to turn in my man card after using that word. But moving on.
You have a man card still?
I knew that was going to bait Gary out. I knew. Hello, Gary.
A long time ago, but
I'm sorry. Did we wake you up on that one, Gary? Good morning.
Like I said, this Riptide's not going to build itself.
There you go. And at the last bit of the news, we got Aeronautica Imperialis. And this is a game that I've actually been kind of loving on since I heard about it coming out. And this one is going to be noted as the Bigga is Betta. And we told you last week, you know, to keep your eyes up to the skies. And it looks like you did. I mean, these guys are now pushing the whole bomber idea. These fat-bellied orc bombers are going to be on the horizon. And these enormous aircraft are the end result of I guess we'll say it right now, size-obsessed orc flyboys that are trying to outdo each other. So, you know, they're making these DACA jets look like mere, like little playthings. And Aeronautica Imperialis gives us a chance to really explore the corners of the far future. And they really have been hinted at before. And I guess you're going to be able to add this, I guess they're calling it an EVY, E-V-Y, E-A-V-Y, bomber to your AirWA in November. So all of this stuff that we just talked about in the news is going to be pre-ordered tomorrow, and it's going to be in your sweaty palms this following Saturday. And I got to tell you, I love these orc jets, because you know that there's absolutely no aeronautical capacitance to them whatsoever. These things are just big rockets with two metal sticks attached to them.
A flying bathtub. Like two bathtubs glued on or welded on top of each other with as much crap stuffed in as they can.
And that's what I love about this, I guess, this lore. But this game has always intrigued me. And I'm going to kind of sidestep here, since we got a few more minutes before we let Gary take over the whole show. And, you know, there was a game, and you guys probably know of it. It's still around. It's still fairly popular, called Axis and Allies. Do you remember that game?
Yep, that is one of the ones that got started. I had the big, huge map that covered my entire table.
Yeah, the 1942 version was what got me hooked way back in the day when it first came out. Good God, maybe 25, 26 years ago. One of my favorite parts of that particular game, and it kind of got me into other games like it, was the aircraft and bombing runs, or the fighter strikes that you could do in that game. I don't know why, you know, most people like the moving the units around or the tanks. I really enjoyed that. So this kind of brings me back to my love affair for kind of the dogfights. And I didn't really care for X-Wing. I tried it, but the mechanics were very clunky and I didn't like it. I kind of watched a couple of videos on this kind of a gameplay, kind of a walkthrough. And the mechanics look really great. I know that I'm going to be getting into this. I know that I'll be trying it out, because it just looks like a game that I could sink into. Gary, what are your thoughts on. I mean, I know that you've been, you know, if everyone wants to listen to Gary's kind of overview on the box games, listen to the last show. But, you know, kind of a quick high-low on this one.
It is what it is. It's another box game that comes out to draw people in to go to the bigger one. It's like the appetizer for the actual meal. It's a 40K. Because you're going to see that bomber, a little bitty version of it, right on the table. And you look to your left, and you're going to see the bigger box, big box one. And then if you buy that one, now you're going to be buying any other stuff. But if they can make the gameplay to where it's challenging and tactical, and what you actually do on the table matters, it'll do well. If they don't do that, then it'll be much like the other board games that they've put out. They're not bad to play, but it just doesn't seem like something that you're going to see a lot. And I said this before, is this is something you're going to see being played at home or a couple of guys playing. And if you would do it every quarter, every 3 months or so, you'd probably get enough people in to play it. And it's not GW's responsibility to start the community, because they gave us things to start a community with. It's up to us to do it. And
hey, Gary, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Couldn't that be used as part of like a mega battle? Like you have the battle going on down on the planet, and then like maybe some guys on another table are playing this, you know.
You can probably tie it all together. Yeah. Sure. But
I think that would be a really cool idea.
Actually. It would, but we got to have some one of us do it.
That's a really great idea. So yeah, so that's the news. That's Go Trick. That's everything coming out for Warcry, and of course, Bigga is Betta. So exciting stuff. But Gary, man, take us away here. What makes a good competitive army? And let's talk through some list examples.
Well, I asked this question before, so now you guys already know the answer to it on our Lost on the Warp podcast. There's typically two types of army lists for 40K when you're talking competitive wise. So don't give me that. Oh, there's more than two. No, there's really not. I'm not talking about assault or so forth or so on. I'm talking about the options that you have. So most of the time people would think if you have a list that gives you more options, that you're going to do better with that list. Well, remember, using more option also leads to more errors.
That's true.
More fail points. The more decisions you have to make, the more chances you have of putting yourself into a bad spot.
Very true.
Whereas if you take a list that's focused and maybe doesn't have a ton of options, but does something really, really well, and then you build around that, those tend to do better. I.e., if you go to 40kstats.com, sure, Pat can bring that up for us while we're sitting there talking about it.
I'm bringing this up right now.
This is the, for what you guys don't know, a guy named The Falcon puts all this together. He's got over 15,000 games. Stats of games of 40K logged, 15,000. And if you go to this is through the top four real quick.
Okay.
Top four is to your right, third one from the end.
Yep.
And then go down, loads up. What you'll see is a trend of things. And now I'm not trying to take away from smaller events that have like 60 or fewer people in it. But if you, you start the first one, the beginning of the year,
Las Vegas Open,
is the last game, or excuse me, the last large event for the season. So you have Astra Militarum, Yanari, Astra Militarum, Cold Mechanicus. Now, Astra Militarum, which we're going to go with AM or Imperial Guard, those lists have a Castellan in it, which is 604 points. And it is basically 1,400 points of support, which is a screen, your flamethrower, so forth and so on. So you have a mob of guys that protect the big thing. It's what it is. People can argue with it. No, it's more than that. No, it's not. It's what it is.
Right.
How you want to surround it. That is the centerpiece. Alex Harrison with his Zanari list designed it to beat that list. And he did very well. You put 7 or 8 flyers on the board. And at the time, there wasn't any rules that mitigated how they were. If you don't have the fly keywords, you can't charge them. And Eldar flyers are -1 to hit because they're a flyer. If they're outside of 12, puts them a -2 to hit. And you get a stratagem that puts them -3 to hit. So you have durability to protect what you want. All those are the same there. So if you go all the way to the bottom, that was the first one of the new season. So if you go all the way down, we just had like right there.
Yeah, there's Nova Open.
Yeah, we can go there. So Tau, which was won by Richard Siegler, obviously you see it at 9-0.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with that, Tau really doesn't have a brutal assault phase. They have a tactical assault phase. There's a massive difference. Tactical assault phase is, okay, I've got drones that don't kill anything, but I want to go wrap this unit so it can't do anything to me.
Right.
It'll go out and wrap a unit that can't do something.
And we're going to talk a little bit about what his list was, because that's pretty much what he did, right?
Well, he's a phenomenal player. I watched every game that I could with him, and he had some of the announcers were kind of baffled on what he was doing. And he was even interviewed by Nick Donovati, which is one more
a hell of a player
larger than anybody else has. And he learned from Richard. That goes to the number one thing that we've talked about a long time ago. Pick your favorite army, play it over and over and over and over and over and over again, and you're going to get better. There are armies that right now, if Grey Knights is your favorite army, I feel you, they've got great lore, but you're not going to win much with it. You can scroll through every one of these, and I don't think you find a Grey Knight list that's finished in the top four the entire season.
Really? You think so? Yeah, I guess.
I'm not to say they're not played. It's just you don't have that many tools to work with. And I know you've got the listeners going, well, you just said if I didn't have many tools to work with, I'd be fine. Okay, you need some tool to work with, all right? They're just at an inherent disadvantage. They do survive fairly well, but they're overcosted for what they do. So when they get reworked, I think they will come along and be better. But with that being said, if you look at the army that is winning, most of them are not this, I have a ton of options army. You have Gene Stiller Colt, but who was running that? Nicholas Rose. He's one of the best Gene Stiller Colt players on the planet.
Right.
Yes, he's going to do better than that. His mind, his play style is designed for that kind of list. Mark Parker. I don't know the man that well, but if you bring up the Orc list, I'm quite sure that it's probably got a crap load of tractor cannons or smasher guns in it and things that protect it. Adeptus Custodes is being ran because you had Caladius Grav tanks that were just brutal. And they recently got nerfed. So you have your centerpiece that goes around it. Like Richard's list has Riptides and Cyclonic Commanders in it, all these other kind of guys that do.
I'll pull one up his thing. List right now.
Yeah, they shoot just incredibly well. And if that, I can't even go into how well it is that they'll shoot and what they do. All they do is shoot. I understand that. But if you look at the. Give me 1 second, or maybe more than 1 second. I had my book on standby, and somehow it disappeared here. So as we go through these, he's got a lot of shield drones. Here's the people's beef with shield drones right now. Is they make Tau probably the most survivable army in the game.
Now let's get into that for maybe some of the folks that are kind of trailing behind on why that is.
Yeah, so a shield drone, well, first of all, to understand drones in Tau, they have a rule called Savior Protocols with drones. So you have a Tau Sept, which is what his clan faction is, whatever you want to call it, is the majority of its Tau Sept. So if you have one of these drones, any of them, shield drone, recon drone, gravitator drone, pulse drone, gun drone, whatever, anything that says drone in it, that's within 3 inches of a infantry or battle suit for Tau. In other words, all the Pathfinders, all the Riptides, all the commanders are battle suits and their infantry. But in 3 inches of those, and you get a wound done to them, if you're in 3 inches of a friendly drone is wounded by enemy attack, roll a D6. On a 2+, you can take that wound and pass it off instead to a drone. And it's not 6 damage anymore, 5. It becomes 1 mortal wound instead of the normal damage. So if you do that into a Riptide, I pass it off to a drone. It takes 1 mortal wound. Now, the recon drone, grav inhibitor drone, or pulse accelerator drones, those just die because they have 1 wound and they took a mortal wound. The shield drones, however, have a 5+ feel no pain or ward save if you want to go with that. So when you put the mortal wound on them, 33% of the time, that drone's not going to die.
Yeah, because you're constantly at five up, feel no pain, and there then you'll be able to pass those off. You know, you're not getting through all those.
You're passing them on to a five up, feel no pain is what you're doing.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's if I were to take a wound, you don't even roll the damage. Because typically it goes hit, wound, damage. This says if a unit is wounded by an enemy attack, you haven't rolled damage yet. I failed my save, you wounded me.
Right.
I now pass that off on a 2+. And I do one mortal wound to a shield drone that's around.
That's amazing.
Here's the other trick. It says shield drone unit within 3 inches. Doesn't say the drone I pull has to be within 3 inches.
Oh, wow.
So if I have those 6 drones and unit coherency is 2 inches, I just have to have one of those drones within 3 inches of a riptide. The other 5 can be strung out across the table. And if I take a wound, I pass it off, I can pull that farthest drone instead of the closest one. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do see that. Right.
You can screen people out. Oh, and by the way, all the drones have this lovely keyword called fly, so you can't wrap them in combat.
and that's the other little piece. But you know, we're talking about riptides, they're not that difficult to kill either, right?
I mean, they are very difficult to kill.
Yeah.
I'll give you a breakdown for that. I know we don't do war scrolls. War scrolls are battle sheets or whatever we want to go through and call them. But there's nothing with pulling like, you know, a couple of numbers off of them just so you're aware of how difficult it is to shoot and kill out a riptide, even if a drone wasn't there. You know, obviously they are much less survivable if you have drones, if you don't have drones. But they have 14 wounds. Not too bad. They're tough 7. Pretty good. They have a 2+ armor save. So,
yeah, 2+ by 5+.
Right. If you're shooting at me with AP nothing weapons, they have a 2+ save and T7. Here's another neat little trick that goes through it that I've watched people do. You have ruins in 40K, which the bottom level blocks line of sight. Right?
Right.
So they'll take the 3 riptides or whatever, put them on the outside of the ruin. All right? You tracking?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm following
then
you.
Then they'll put all the shield drones inside the ruin. It's still within 3 inches of the riptides. You can't shoot at the shield drones now unless you have something that ignores line of sight. So you're having to shoot at riptides, which are toughness 7, and wound them before I have to pass it off. So essentially you're shooting at toughness 7 shield drones.
Now, do you know at all, is that what Richard Siegler did with his? No,
absolutely not. But okay. That was from what another guy did. He, and the guns they have on them are ridiculous. For just an example, they have heavy burst cannons on them. They have, that's 12 shots, 36 inch range, shrink 6, 2 damage apiece, AP is -1. For those people who don't know, Riptide's everything called a Nova Reactor. Now, I know it sounds like a Tau episode, but it's not. I'll finish this up in a couple of minutes. But very focused. Have I said anything about psychics or assault right now?
Nothing. Nope.
Nothing. Survivability and shooting. That's all I've talked about.
Yeah, true.
And that's what they do. So at the beginning of your movement phase, you can pick a Riptide. Okay. In your movement phase, you can choose a Riptide's no reactor. If you do, the model suffers a mortal wound, and you pick one of these things to last until the beginning of your next turn. So you don't have to roll or nothing. Just takes a mortal wound. And if you take a ethereal, you can give them a 6+, feel no pain. So 16% of the time, you don't even take that mortal wound. Now, you can now go to a 3+ and vulnerable save instead of a 5. So now, the difference is the invulnerable save, AP doesn't matter. It's always a 3+.
Yeah.
Or you can boost it to where it gets to move 2d6 in the charge phase. So it gets to move anywhere 2 to 12 inches in the charge phase. Or you can do a Nova Reactor, which for its heavy burst cannon, instead of it being heavy 12, it becomes heavy 18. 18 shots per riptide.
Amazing. And in this particular case, he was running 1, 2, 3 of them. Yeah.
three Riptides. Oh, and there's also smart missile systems on there.
Yeah.
That's 8 shots from smart missiles, 18 shots from heavy burst cannon. Oh, and just for funsies, once per game, he can have those re-roll every single one of their hits.
Yeah. And that, but that's only once per battle or once per game?
One commander can do what's called Kion, okay, which is any tower units, battle suits within 6 inches of the commander re-rolls their hits for that phase.
Wow.
So you're looking at 18, 36, 46, 54 heavy burst cannon shots re-rolling all their hits, and you're looking at 8, 16, 24 smart SMS re-rolling all their hits.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And it keeps them alive by shield drones. Now, the secret sauce in there, see where it says commander?
Yeah, right here.
Cyclic ion blaster?
Yeah.
So those commanders are brutal when they shoot. Stop if you're catching on here. This is all shooting.
Yeah, all shooting. Because they're pretty much paper tigers in close combat, right?
Right. Yeah, you know, they're terrible in close combat.
Right. So he's playing to the strength of the army.
Weapons are terrible.
Right.
But the cyclic ion commander, or cyclic ion weapon, I know they have some weird-ass names
right
that goes along with it. That weapon is no joke. And when I say no joke, I mean to the tune of it is assault 3 if you overcharge it. Okay? Assault 3, strength 8, AP negative 1, D3 damage apiece. Range is 18 inches. Oh, well, that doesn't sound bad at all. Okay, look at the number. How many is on that commander?
3 of them.
3.
Yeah.
So that's 9 shots.
Holy cow.
Oh, and by the way, they hit them too, just in case you were careful. Oh, and by the way, they also benefit from rerolling all their hits once per game. There's 3 of those in the list. So
yeah,
to get past that, and that's a breakdown of everybody understands how much firepower it has and how it survives now. But to get past that point about it is, you have to play it very well still.
You know, can I interject one thing that I'm noticing on this list? And I know this is something that honestly, folks, for you guys just kind of joining us, you know, this is something that Gary preaches about probably, if not every show, so close to every show, the average person isn't going to know the difference. But I would call this, and I'm going to steal your phrase here, Gary, I think Richard Siegler has literally identified the fail points in whatever the original version of this list was and fixed those things. Because I don't see anything. He's got a counter to just about any damn thing that could be out there.
Yeah, there are matchups that aren't that great for him, though.
Okay.
But there are, because they asked him straight up, and he says that. He's like, okay, well, Eldar Flyers at the moment, his list is very good against those. But if they go first, it can become more difficult. Right, then you have things like knights, imperial knights, the close combat guys that run across the table and can get into combat with you turn one is just going to stomp those drones to death.
Gene Stealers, maybe, right?
No, imperial knights.
Oh, I thought we were just kind of moving on as another army that would give this army right here.
Oh, a Gene Stealer cult army, a Tyranid army, any assault based army that's not like imperial knights or whatnot is you. No, you're going to be it's not good. I'm trying to think of a good way to describe it, but
yeah, I could see that. Yeah, you're going to get vaporized before you get there.
Yeah, well, you're in a concrete canoe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to work, and here's why: because everything is Tau Sep. When you charge them, they hit on 5s instead of 6s.
Oh, for their Overwatch.
And additionally, they have a lovely little thing called the Greater Good, which is what their whole thing is based off of. Is for the greater good. They always say that, for the greater good, blah, blah, blah. So what the greater good rule is ridiculous. There's a lot of people that don't play with Tau, though, because it is just shooting. You know, they don't get the challenge of an assault phase other than I need to go assault something to protect myself. They don't get the psychic phase that lets them do all this other cool stuff. But what they do. And they do very well. Greater good. When an enemy unit declares a charge against you, against you with this ability, within 6 inches of one of the charging unit's targets, may fire Overwatch as if they were also charged. So all those battle suits, all those commanders, everything about them, they're going to be around each other, all within 6 inches of another. You charge any one of those units. The Tau player can then go, I'm going to overwatch you with my entire army.
Hmm.
It's not good.
No.
So there's things that ignore overwatch.
And overwatch you on fives.
Yes, yeah. On five. There's also a, if you wanted to be really, really troll against assault armies, there's, see what it says, advanced targeting system?
Yes.
On Commander. And then on the Riptides, it says velocity trackers. There's a signature system you can take that lets you re-roll your overwatch shots.
Interesting. Really?
So hitting on fives and re-rolling all of them.
Well, are you still re-rolling on the fives?
No, your fives hit. So your fives and sixes hit. So you pick up your one, two, threes, and fours, and you roll all of them again.
Right. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
But now you're, if you don't play against an assault army,
mm-hmm.
it does nothing for you.
Okay.
All right. So that's why you typically don't take it. Advanced targeting system, I believe, gives you a extra AP to your weapon. And velocity tracker gives you plus one to hit flyers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's, yeah, there are some very, very solid things you can do to increase your shooting. So to go past that, the other ones that went well, if you'll go back one page, head back on there, one. Go up to, you should still be, I think, into, you're still there. So just stay there.
Yep.
Go all the way back down. If you look at these lists of what's doing, winning larger events, yes, you'll have Gene Stealer Colts and stuff come out in the beginning because nobody knew how to play against them. Right? But once it gets figured out, you're done. So you had Tau in the Nova Open. What's right above that? The one above it. Yeah. Look, who won that one?
Tau Empire. Right.
And then you have Adeptus Custodes, which is shooting. Death Watch, which is a lot of shooting. Necrons is kind of one-dimensional. It does things well. Yeah. No psychics and Necrons. Very few assault.
Yeah.
Custodes, you have assault, but they usually counter. Everything else is very good shooting.
But what I'm looking
here,
at, go ahead.
Right.
What I'm looking at is the amount of players, though. You know, you got 32 in this one. You got 295 in this one.
Right. They won both. You had 28 in the other one. There's elves, 32. Keep going up. We'll get to some of the bigger ones. 32,
28. 30,
30, 30, 30.
Yeah. So here's 82.
82. Look, Renegade Knights.
Renegade Knights.
There you go. And what do they beat out? Gene Stealer Colts.
Okay. Looks like Gene Stealer Colts is always the bridesmaid, never the bride lately.
Lately, yes. You had Nick Nalavati did win the Invitational with Gene Stealer Colts, but that's they take some of the top 16 players or high level players and put them in a single loss tournament. And they do it right before the Nova Open. But yeah, Renegade Knights, Chaos Demon with Jim Vessel, who's been playing that the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Trock,
Adeptus Great guy. Custodes. We had him on the show.
Yep. Eric Trock, Adeptus Custodes. That's another one that's very focused. Orcs, another one that's very focused with the shooting.
Now, let me kind of pull this over here real quick. Was that the same guy that played Rich in the Nova? Is that the same Eric Trock that played
against Nick Rose?
Yeah, Nick Rose, I meant. Yeah. Yeah,
played against Nick Rose. Okay. That's where that brought it to the other point, too, of when you're playing an army that has all these different tools and everything, it's very hard to keep up with all of their rules.
Right.
There was rules mistakes made by Nick Rose that I don't know if they were – I would assume they were mistakes. You know, I'm not going to sit here and call the man a cheater, but one of them was Return of Shadows. You take a unit off the table, it has to come back on the very next turn. He took it off the table turn one. It didn't come on until turn three, and somehow it got ruled where they're allowed to come on. Those were dead. Another one he tried to use, one that allowed them to not be shot at unless they were the closest visible unit. But there's a third part of that. They also have to be fully entrained, and they were not. You know, these kind of things. And that was against – that second was against Richard Siegler.
Right, yep.
So now he got to shoot at him. The devastating part about, even with, there was like, oh, well, you've got no Overwatch. Well, you can put an Overwatch on one character charge in. I can't shoot Overwatch that guy at all, but it's one model.
Sure.
So you can touch maybe two models. Then you can do Mass Hypnosis on a model to where, oh, that doesn't get Overwatch. That's correct. But Mass Hypnosis is just that model. So I can still grade a good and shoot you with everything else. Mm-hmm. So Nick put in and got a Patriarch into there. So he shut off one Riptide. Then Nick charged with 10 Aberrants. Aberrants are toughness 4, 2 wounds apiece. They reduce damage done to him by one, and they have a five of feel no pain. He had 10 of them. Two of them made combat after Overwatch. Two.
Yeah.
So that's 18 wounds with a feel no pain and damage reduced by one that he did in Overwatch, only hitting 33% of the time. Any way to go through that, what I'm trying to get at is to, if you are capable and you have the mindset and the ability to where you need that army with the 50,000 fingers.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, okay, I need this, set, and this, and this, and you're perfect. You do all of that. The other thing, don't forget, there's time constraints, too. You don't have 7 hours to do this. You have three. You get an hour and a half.
Yeah, slow play can get you.
Models, put it in the right place, shoot the right things, make the right charges. Don't make any mistakes.
Right.
Yeah. That's very difficult to do, and I applaud the ones that are able to do that in these large events. Now,
yeah,
if you take Tau, you take gun lines, you take things that shoot, and they're like, oh, well, then that just means assault's dead. I wouldn't say that it's dead. I just think we're not doing it right.
Yeah.
That's all. You still a Colt, that's what they're going to do. They have some good shooting, but they're going to assault. There's some out there that can. Ridiculous one. Marines just came out with new Marines, right?
Right. Yep.
They so, sure did. Black Templars, I'll do this real quickly. For those of you out there that's like, okay, well, I'm just going to get rid of all my assault stuff and go shooting. Now, that's
it. Black Templars would be a good example. Okay, I want to hear this one.
Well, Black Templars, their built-in trait is they reroll charges.
Okay. Yep.
Very good. Right? Then you have a chaplain that gives you +2 to charges of bubble at the beginning of the turn. Also very good. So you can drop pod in these Terminators turn one, because drop pods let you come in turn one now that are Black Templars. At the beginning of your turn, you did your prayer or whatever it was to get a 6-inch bubble around your chaplain. You put a jump back on that chaplain. He now moves 14 inches.
Sure.
You get your other one. Now he gets a +2 to his advance and charge. So now he's going a minimum of 17, a bubble of 6 inches. So 17 plus 6, 23 inches.
Yep.
Minimum range you're going to get. So you can reliably run on 25 or 26 inches. So you get him within range of those Black Templars that just came out of this pod. Now they have a 7-inch charge that they can reroll with Thunder Hammers. They're going to beat the hell out of whatever they hit.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, here it comes. Well, how do they survive? There's this ridiculous stratagem that they have. Two command points, right? You know how wounding mechanics work at 40K, right?
Yeah.
Strength versus toughness.
Sure.
So they're toughness 4 with a 3 up and vulnerable save, 2 wounds apiece. Okay, well, I'm just going to shoot the crap out of them. They're going to die. There's a stratagem that says that unit, you ignore all wound rolls of 1, 2, and 3 in wounding that unit. So now I have 3 upper vulnerable saves, 20 wounds in a unit, toughness 4, 2 units per model, and you have to wound me on 4s. Regardless of what you're shooting at me, you wound me on 4s. Last cannon, 4s. Volcano cannon, 4s. I don't care. And I don't know math that well, but if my save is better than your wound roll.
True, yeah.
You know, and now you have to deal with them. You can't ignore them. Or they're running around, beat the hell, everything's in your zone. So there are options out there to do it, but don't have a lot of fail points. What's the biggest fail point there? If you fail that charge, you killed nothing.
Yeah.
You've got 250 points set out there that's just going to eat fire from an entire army.
Yeah, but again, this goes back, like I said, and I'm readdressing it here, is you know, understanding what the fail points are in your list and correcting those things. I mean, that you preach on that all the time.
Yes. And I've learned, and I have thousands of points of Gene Stealer Colt.
Yes, you do.
And
I've seen him, folks. Yes, he does. It's almost to it's like I worry about him a little bit on a psychological level.
So now I've got, I had a friend of mine that plays Tau, has a very nicely painted Tau army that's like, hey, I'm going to buy a house and I wanted to have some money to help out with whatever it's going to be. So I bought them from him. Right. And now I've started to play with those and went, okay, is it as fun? No, it's not. It's not as fun as playing Gene Stealer Colt because you got all this cool shit you can do. But when that cool stuff fails, guess what it is then? It's not cool shit anymore. It's just shit.
Yeah, it's like what you always say. If you play with an army you like, you'll go 3-2.
Right. If you're very good with it, if you play an army you like that is good and doesn't have a lot of fail points, you can get higher than that. So I started playing with Tau, and I have to rework the way my brain thinks. Because with Assault, it was, how do I get rid of all this useless stuff to go kill what it is I need to kill? With Tau, it's like, how do I get it within 36 inches, and I'm going to destroy whatever it is. It's not an if or a question. That stuff's going to die. Period.
Right.
I mean, that is the way that it is. So to bring this part of the show and it says to a close, my suggestion, if you would like to do well at larger events, work on your army, whatever that is, and get as minimal amount of fail points as possible. If you are relying on one particular thing to win a game and it's not a 90% or better guarantee, then it's a bad choice. It's a fail point. Because 15% of the time, you just lose because it doesn't work.
And I'm going to kind of back up something else, too. And folks, if you guys have been listening to the show and especially listen to Gary, I mean, the guy is an unbelievable gamer. The guy just knows the game, and he knows how to beat you. And you're beaten before you know you're beaten when you play this guy, honestly.
But, you know, honestly, Pat, just listening to him makes me want to play 40K even more.
That's what I'm talking about.
I got to tell you, man. You know, Gary, if you think about it here, you kind of made Steve and I a little moist.
Oh,
Gary, I apologize.
I'm sorry. I just had to say that. But in all seriousness, I mean, this is what you hear on the show all the time. What we talk about is know your army and know the other army. I mean, Gary, real quick, what's your little tidbit on the stratagems, bud?
Well, first part is know all the game rules yourself. The basic one, it's in a big rule book. Know all of those. If you don't know those and you go there and you complain about losing, that's your fault. Period. Those are the basic rules everybody has to follow. Now, a little trick that I like to do is, I read a lot about other rules. I watch game reports, all that stuff, so I can kind of have some idea what's going on with my opponent across the table. Because let's face it, this isn't really governed when you're playing against somebody. It's you and your opponent governing each other. So if they can try and get over on you, a majority will attempt to do that. But they sell these little cards. Don't go buying the Codex. Don't spend $50 every time an army comes out. But for $15, you can go buy a box of data cards, which will typically have all of their stratagems, all of their psychic powers or special abilities or whatnot at your fingertips. Just bring them out on the table and go, what are you playing today? Are you playing with Tau? Okay. And you grab those cards, you put them on the table.
Yeah.
You immediately started the mental with the other person like, well, I'm going to need to make sure that I'm doing the right way because this person has it across. Whether you looked at them or not, you could have just took the plastic off of them. They don't know that. But you can look through those, you know. And when we're hanging out in our beach lab, a.k.a. bathroom, you can read through those cards, you know.
Yeah. But you want to know something? It also prevents any of the unnecessary, I guess, shenanigans or someone's going to try to sneak one over on you. But good stuff, Gary.
You can take out their psychic powers, too. They're going to go, okay, my warlord knows these three powers. Okay. If you have their cards, you can take those three powers and put them in front of you.
That's true. That's true.
I'm going to go cast this as Warp Charge 6. Well, right here it says it's Warp Charge 9. Why is yours 6?
I so hope I am there when you do that to somebody, and it's not me.
I do it every Saturday.
Honestly. Well, guys, there you have it, man. That right from Gary, man, is what makes a good competitive army, and we went through some lists. I'm telling you, man, folks, if you're listening right now, listen to that man, honestly. But rolling on, we got another guy that's with us. Steve, I got to tell you, man, we're going to talk a little bit about the Osiarch Bone Reapers, and we're going to kind of tie this down here a little bit. We talked about them last week. We had the story break right here on Grimdark Live when the news was released on Nova. And, the early interpretation of this army was that it was going to be an extension of the Tomb Kings, maybe bring back the Tomb Kings a little bit. We know that that's not the case. But Steve, kind of take a quick walkthrough of your experience and kind of your background with Tomb Kings leading up to your points of view on the Osiarch Bone Reapers.
Yeah, Tomb Kings were released, I think, midway through 6th edition, and they were an instant hit. People loved them. They loved the Egyptian aesthetic that the army had because they were such a multifaceted army. You could do ambush with them. You could move troops out of sequence. You could still take horde units if you wanted to, like big units of skeletons.
You said horde, didn't you?
Oh, God Almighty, Gary. Did he take his meds?
I don't know if he is or not. He's supposed to. I know his
father said. I thought that. I heard something. I wasn't sure if it was my microphone. I wonder what it was. But anyway, keep going.
Are you still on furlough?
And I don't think that's a microphone, but whatever.
Do you need to take penicillin with furlough, or am I okay just with the furlough?
Oh, my God. Anywho.
Right. A cillin cocktail? Is that what it is? Anything that ends in
cillin? All right. Sorry.
And just think, Gary, we signed the release papers for him.
Yeah, I think that power of attorney was a bad idea.
Okay, now that Pat has taken us on that, what is it, the left turn at Albuquerque?
I love that town.
All right, so I played the Tomb Kings for most of 6th edition. I won a grand tournament with them, so they have a special place in my heart. This new version of the AOS 2.0 Tomb Kings, I think, are going to have elements of Tomb Kings. We obviously have the Screaming Skull Catapult-like models that are coming, and there are two variations of them. One of them is, it seems to be a war machine that crawls or moves, and the other one seems to be just your traditional standard Screaming Skull-like catapult. They have their basic troops, so they have their foot soldiers. They have their undead constructs, very similar to the Ushabti from the original Tomb Kings. And they have a leader, Katakrus, who is, people are jokingly calling him Xerxes right now because he kind of looks like Xerxes from 300.
He does, yeah.
But the entire product line looks really cool. They look really interesting as an addition to the Death Armies. How well they're going to sell, I think they're going to be probably one of the best sellers for Death for over the next 8 months. Personally, I'm waiting for Soulblight, which is the vampires, but I think they're going to be a great faction.
Do you think they're going to have staying power?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, this army's not going anywhere.
Okay.
They're going to, they're going to knock some heads together when they get on the table, and I can't wait. I cannot wait to fight them with my Fire Slayers. So, Kyle, if you're out there listening, I want to be your first game.
Oh, yeah. Gary, and this is the model right here that Gary was eyeballing.
Yep, that's my favorite model right there.
So what do you think? You think you're going to dump the fish for these guys, Gary?
I have a very problem with self-control and moderation. So
That's very true. That's very true.
It's quite possible. Gavin, with my son as well, who's responsible for a lot of our take ones and battle reports are going to be going up here pretty soon. Matter of fact, recording two or three of them tomorrow. And so he likes these as well. So I might, but I really love the Fire Slayers too. And you talking about the dwarf just made it worse. Thanks for that. So I think those two might be the ones that I go into. I could go into these and have Gavin still do his Dark Elves. He's still waiting for rules. I told him good luck on that one. And just get a bigger army so we could all go play with them. Because I would really love to go to a tournament with my son and play in a team tournament with the same one. Because, I mean, that would be something, you know, memories is what we create when we do this.
That's true.
So, love that.
That is a very, I mean, honestly, and I am not a death-oriented player. My son, Evan, played Death for a long time and was actually pretty damn good at it.
He was.
They were just never my cup of tea. I loved fighting against them. And, you know, in the last few years, maybe it's just been the fantasy world has just been saturated. The tournament world in fantasy, I should say, Age of Sigmar, has been saturated with Death. I mean, the last two Adepticons, you know, in the championships, I played a total of 10 games between both Adepticons, and 9 of those games were against Death. And that's a lot. And of course, a couple of them were flesh eaters. But for the most part, they were the Nagash, you know, boner
the
bunch.
Spam, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but this army did intrigue me. And honestly, I like the idea that it's a construct.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea that it's a construct. I like the idea that. Mm-hmm. That it's almost like if you don't pay the tithe, then they put you like in a statue or something. You know, something that ilk.
No, the bottom line is if you don't pay the tithe, you become part of the tithe. They actually will take your bones instead of the bones of your dead.
But The reason why I like the Death faction, where it goes to it, Death and Destruction are the two that I like. I like the Death one because Death comes for everybody.
Yes.
You can run as long as you want. You can kill as much stuff as you want. But in the end, nothing lasts forever.
You know, Gary, I was talking to Pat about this, and I said, if Soul Blight was already out, like if it already had come out like maybe a year ago, and it was, you know, good army, but, you know, nothing to write home about, I would definitely jump at this army because I do love Death. I just don't like Nagash, and I don't like the I just think he's a completely boring.
Well, I agree, but he's one of my favorite models.
Yeah, oh, the model is phenomenal. But as a playable model on the table, I just think it's an unimaginative and boring army to play.
Fair.
I would but love
there's a question.
To play.
How many fail points love to play this army.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
How many fail points does that army have?
I didn't hear what you said, Gary. Say it one more time.
So the one that had Nagash in it, the Death Army, you said it was boring to play. How many fail points does it have? Does it meet the tournament level criteria for an army?
I can answer this.
They do. Yeah, they win tournaments, so there's no doubt. I mean, right.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of armies that do really, really well probably may not be the most exciting to play with.
Well, let me just throw this out there, and this is going to probably make me sound like one of those anti-Nagash weenies, and of course that's what I am, but I'm going to say this right now. Fail points, it starts and stops with Nagash. What I've seen in the multiple games of playing against Nagash, you kill him, you take him out. Now, I can recall once in the earlier edition of Beast Claw Raiders, before the Herdstone got changed, I killed Nagash with my Herdstone. I killed him with my Thunder Tusk Beast Riders once. I killed him once with my Minotaurs. I can say right now, once you remove that big bony bastard from the table,
the game's
almost
over.
Well, it's almost like that other player is so dependent upon that one model that they just don't know what to do when he's gone.
Yeah, it's a kid with his daddy's gun.
Exactly. So you can kind of, you know, so I guess, I don't know if that, I think that might answer your question on that, Gary, because, you know, that was the end all be all of that particular Death Army. I mean, I'm trying to rack my brain in something in 40K, but that would be similar to that. But
well, this new guy that's coming out, this Catacross, he is a Mortark. He's the Mortark of the Necropolis. So he's going to be powerful. He's going to be like a Manfred. He's going to be like Neferata. He's going to be a powerful character. He's just going to be a character on foot instead of riding some big beastie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So he'll have elements of Nagash in him. In other words, he'll have powers that are going to be pretty outrageous, I'm sure.
Right. So, I mean, anything similar to that one in 40K, Gary? I guess what I'm going back to, and I'm jumping the gun.
Probably Necrons, right, Gary? Wouldn't they be more?
Well, what I'm talking about is not necessarily these guys. What I'm saying is Nagash. You know, army that if he's killed off the table, that's it.
Oh, no, there's several that are like that. Mortarion, Magnus.
Oh, yeah.
Human. Those are Sigil Priests 2-1, but there's a lot of things you can do to protect them, and those things don't have a lot of fail points because they protect them pretty well. Plague Bearers are kind of a pain in the ass to kill, and Mortarion and them set behind him. So if you don't have the firepower to deal with Mortarion turn one, he's charging you, and he is reaping havoc on whatever you have.
That's true.
I think it depends on what you do to support him. Yeah. I know Nagash is like an insane amount of points, though.
Well, he is, right. So let's kind of go back to this. I mean, Steve, let's kind of wrap the segment up. So, I mean, you're leaving out one key part of your background with the whole Death Tomb Kings now moving into, let's kind of go back a little bit about your tournament experience with that army.
Yeah, there was a tournament called Lustria, which was a grand tournament that they had at the bunker. And basically what it was, they took the store champion from all of the stores around the Midwest and you know, all over the country, I guess, and brought them to the bunker to have this grand tournament. And I had the very fortunate experience of playing against some of the best generals I've ever played against in that tournament. And I was able to pull off a victory, and it was great. It was a fun experience. It was a very rewarding experience. But what kind of hurts me now is that the army that exists, however, there is an element of that army in this new Osiark Bone Reaper list. And I think it's going to be enjoyable for people to play. I think it's going to bring back some memories for me, but I don't see myself playing it. I guess there's an old expression, you can't go home again.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just not an army that I think where I want to plant my flag. I think Soulblight, if I'm going to plant my flag in the Death Order, in the Death Legions, it's going to be with Soulblight.
Sure.
I absolutely love the vampires. That when I think of undead, when I think of fantasy undead, I think of the vampire legions.
See? Yep. I think of mummies.
And then you would have loved Tomb Kings.
Yeah, I'm sure I would have to.
You know, I think werewolves, and that's why.
And an added thought, they hate Nagash.
Yeah.
Vampires absolutely despise the fact that, because they're so arrogant and narcissistic, they hate Nagash. They hate following him. They hate being imprisoned by him in the sense that they have to obey him, especially Monfred, because Monfred will suffer no other leader before him. And unfortunately, in this situation he's in right now, he is one of the avatars, if you will, one of the Mortarks of Nagash, and he hates it.
Right.
He'd betray him in a heartbeat if he could.
Nice. Well, I got to tell you, man, that's so the Osiarchs, I mean, these guys are coming out. We're excited for them. And yeah, I kind of wanted everyone to kind of hear. Yeah, I kind of wanted everyone to hear kind of the background of where Steve came from. I know that we started to really get into this army last week, and we're going to continue to talk about them here on the show and kind of present them as more stuff unfolds, because I can't imagine this is the whole model line in that army. I think there's going to be a lot more coming down the pike. But I wanted to kind of show off a little bit here that Steve, he's a championship player. Everyone knows Gary. You know, on the other side, just sitting here talking about what makes a good competitive army and a good list example. Gary is a champion player himself. And I guess the thing that we boiled out of this conversation is between the three of us, I'm the loser. Yeah, I guess
I'm the only one who didn't know that.
Gary, I'm going to let you take that one. That's yours.
Yeah, I said he's the only one who didn't know that.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man. But a man can dream, can he? So
play, brother. Just got to play.
Oh, I tell you, did you ever hear the story of the guy that sat down to play and everyone started laughing?
Oh my goodness!
He left the bathroom door open.
Oh my god!
That's a heartfelt story. That's a human story, humanist story.
And
really.
Just think, Gary, we volunteered for this.
I did twice. Twice. I did have to say thumbs before it started, but I think that was from football game pizza.
Do you think we're going to enjoy visiting Pat in prison?
I don't know. I might wave on the way by.
It'll be great. I'll be waving back to my little fingers through the little bars, just waving, Yeah. All right. So moving on, we're getting down to the end of the show. And as we do, whenever we get to this point, we get to the question of the day. So I'm going to throw this out there to both Steve and Gary and kind of surprise them with this question. And of course, I think, Steve, I'm going to throw this at you first. So here's the question. And Gary, we're going to pitch this one to you right after. So here it is. Here's the question. Question of the day. Does the amount of painted armies in a gaming community speak to the strength of that community?
As I stated before last night.
Yeah.
If you'd have asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have probably said the same thing that Gary said last night, which was that no. Now that I have become a painter and that I have gotten better and I see how beautiful armies look on the table and how well it represents the community, I have changed my opinion. Now, I think Gary made a very good point yesterday. There is a difference between the gamer and the hobbyist. And I agree with his point that you'll find more hobbyists that love painted armies in AOS than you probably will in 40K, because the 40K guy, as Gary stated yesterday, is trying to practice for a tournament. So he's not going to waste time painting up a unit he can't use.
Right. And I guess for some of you folks that are just kind of joining us and a little confused why we're talking in the past tense, it's because I'm an idiot and I ruined the show yesterday. It was the we had a problem with my seat cushion connecting to the keyboard, and I killed my my mic. And
is that a metaphor?
It is a metaphor. Do you have to take that with penicillin too?
Oh,
so a little itchy.
Aren't you just immune to antibiotics by now?
That's it. So folks, that's why we're referencing everything in the past tense. But all right, so Gary, throwing the question of the day right back at you. I mean, does the amount of painted armies in a gaming community speak to the strength of that community?
No.
From the 40K perspective, no.
Well, here's why. And I've had a little bit more time to think about this afterwards, because a lot of times we're on the show, you know, you've got that hour and a half, maybe a little bit before, to think about your answer, but after you give it, you can think more. I still say no, it doesn't, because to many of the points that Steve had said, a lot of 40Kers are going out and playing. These are what I see. So if you're at home playing in your basement or Joe's garage or Billy's tavern, whatever the case may be, I don't know. Maybe you guys have things that are beautifully painted and go that way, but we are practicing for events and trying to hone and make our list the best possible. So hobby and portion of it kind of becomes a side point. But like Aaron Tower, I'm probably 3-50 against this guy, right?
Aaron, I appreciate everything you do, man.
Hey, I play him again tomorrow, though. So I'm going to go throw down some pancakes and see what happens. But he is a phenomenal painter. I mean, phenomenal. But it takes him forever to get anything painted, and he practices all the time. He borrows hammers when he goes to tournaments. He loves the hobby side of it. He just takes a very, very long time to do it. So he's there, and he'll be there tomorrow and playing. Jeremy's going to be there tomorrow and playing. A guy named Mike Smith's going to be there tomorrow and playing. Great guy. We just met him. He went to Siege World with us. So we're all going to be there playing tomorrow. And I'll put it out there. I'll throw this down there. I don't see that in the AOS community. I don't see every Saturday when I go to these numerous game stores, 5-6 or more guys showing up to play AOS.
No, you won't even find one or two, Gary, unless you plan a game.
Right.
You will very rarely get a walk-in game.
Right. I think that is the difference between them. So, yes, while AOS armies do look better when they're painted and when you go to an event, all the armies are gorgeous, but what about when that's not happening? We're there every Saturday or 3 Saturdays a month, sometimes more.
Yeah, as a community true.
Playing. So I think it depends on what you consider to be stronger. AOS stronger on the painting and hobby side of it. 40K stronger on the practice
yeah.
side of it.
Yeah, I you know what? I really like the way you put that, because I mean, I've always looked at the 40K crowd and just, you know, getting my toe kind of tipped in the, you know, in the water there in that crowd. They are, I don't want to say more competitive, but I think they're more fanatical. And I'm gonna say this first, and I know I kind of here's me take another left turn at Albuquerque. I like fanatics. I mean, do you ever stop to think how this country got here? I mean, I like fanatics. If you're gonna be a heart doctor, be a fanatical heart doctor. If you're gonna be, you know, whatever. So I like fanatics. I really, really do. But I got to say that I do see the fanaticism and the embracement of that game in 40K more with that crowd. And I think the storyline and the you'll hear Age of Sigmar guys talk more about their bases and their diorama almost level bases than you will about, you know, like, you know, in the 40K side about, you know, a lost opportunity on a stratagem or, you know, on a charge or something like that.
Yeah, so I don't think we've ever talked about in the group that I went with and drove to many hours with, stuffed in a car with, not one time do I ever remember any type of hobbying conversation ever.
Right. Yeah.
It's always tactics and us arguing about who's right and who's wrong. And then it's me going, well, there's one way to solve this. Put your shit on the table. Let's find out.
Exactly. Exactly. So I guess for me, and thinking about that question for myself, you know, I'm the kind of guy that, you know, hell, I don't know the difference between a right or left-handed paintbrush, but I do like this. I think for me, when I, you know, thinking about this question, you know, before I guess I heard both of your answers, I thought it made a community more embraceful and more respectful to their other, you know, members. But maybe that's not necessarily the case. Maybe it is. I guess I'm going to use the word cultural. Well, maybe it's a cultural difference between the two types of gamers.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's just a difference between the two communities. I totally agree with you,
Pat. There is.
And again, we're, you know, for everyone listening, this is Grimdark Live. You know, we represent both 40K and Age of Sigmar. I guess the best way to put it, guys, we're bi-dicual, right? I mean, right?
Yeah, Steve? I thought you were going to leave that out. I thought you were going to leave that out.
I can't. I mean, look, we are. Are you saying that, you know, you've got some kind of phobia against being bi-dicual?
No, I don't. But I think that you talk about it way too much not to actually involve it yourself.
You roll your dice both ways, right, Gary? I mean, you know, Age of Sigmar, 40K, Steve, huh?
Oh boy,
Pat.
Folks,
and lots of it.
Folks, I just want to say here in Grimdark Live, we're proud to be bi-dicual.
You need to change out your penicillin medication for mental medication.
Boy, I got to tell you, I lost the suppository here somewhere. Oh, there it is.
Found it. Nice. Well, when's the last time you actually played a full game of 40K?
Oh, no, you didn't.
All right. You know what? You had to go there right in the schmeckle here. We're closing the show out. We're laughing, and you just mollywhomp me right there.
I'm just saying, if you're going to do something, as William Painter said, the only way to do something is to do it.
That is the truth. That is the truth. But all right, so with that, I think it's a good time to kind of get to this this almost final point in the show here. Gary, closing thoughts, man. What do we got? Closing thoughts on the show.
So, well, closing thoughts that I'm going to go with is not necessarily just going to be entirely over the show. It's going to be something that we need to look at a little bit more. And I'm not saying don't be less competitive. Don't play that kind of thing. Play by the rules, all that, do that. But remember, all of us in this hobby, every one of us, whether it's for AOS or 40K, or if you're just doing Shadespire or Warcry or Titanicus or Imperial Aeronauticus, any of those, we all have something similar with each other. Whether we're the complainer or we're the super nice guy or we're the super rules lawyer or we're the I don't give a fuck, I'm just going to roll dice. Anyways, we all have something similar with one another. And we're not around as long as we like to think we are. So whenever we're playing, just take that into consideration that this doesn't last forever. Stop worrying about shit that doesn't matter. Do things that do matter. What matters is you and yours and what you find passionate in your life and what it is that you love to do. For some of us, that's just family. You know, there's people who don't go do anything. They're 40K or AOS day is hanging out in the backyard with their wife and their dog and grilling every weekend. That's theirs. Or having friends come over and drink beers, talk about football every weekend. That's maybe their main thing. Do that and enjoy it. Don't worry about the stuff that doesn't matter. There's things that we put and stress ourselves out about that have no bearing on who we are as a person, what we love to do as people, and how we treat one another. If it doesn't affect one of those three things, why worry about it? What's the point? If you're a worrywart and you want to, go ahead. I'm just saying. Stress is something that does weird things to you. So the less of it you can have, the better. And last thing you should do is stress about a hobby that we all love to do. AOS people, 40K people, oh, we're different. Yeah, we're different, but the same. To be honest on that. And at the end of the day, we're going to look back and go, man, I wish I'd have spent more time doing the things I love to do and it mattered than worrying about shit that didn't matter. So take every instance you have, every moment you have, and spend it loving yourself, everybody around you, and what it is that you want to do. And if you're around somebody that is negative and then carries all that stress with them and they don't approach it the same way, that's fine. Let them be that way. But don't change who you are because somebody else is who they are. That doesn't work. Then you're not being you and yourself. Be the best version of you that you can be every day that you go and do something. And I think you'll be better in life, you'll be better at the game, and you'll have a much, much better time than worrying about what everybody else is doing. That would be my closing thoughts for the day.
That is awesome.
Well said.
Yeah. I you know what? I'm really happy that we brought the closing thought back, and I'm kind of happy that, It's not me or anyone else slamming on it. It's we're giving it to Gary. Gary.
What?
Yes, awesome, sir. Awesome way that you just put that.
There's one other thing too that I wanted to say that I left out.
Okay.
That I meant to. And this is on a commercial that's got J.J. Watts in it from the NFL. He says, if you wanted to offer some advice to somebody to be competitive in something, find that person that wants to beat you every time you play, because they're going to make you better than you are now. Stop playing the person you know you're going to beat every time. Find that one person that's hell-bent on beating you and play them every time you can, and you'll get better.
Hey, Aaron Tyler. Tyler, I hope you're listening, man.
I play him every chance I get. Every chance.
Well, that's a heck of a way to close the show. Good stuff.
From Dark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things Dice, Dragons, Demons, and a Dwarf in the Age of Sigmar and 40K Worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. And if you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week, with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking, goose sniffing game of goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.